And welcome to Thursday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. Alongside Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Medow with you for the next 60 minutes as we'll be breaking down all that is happening with respect to the New York Giants. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. You can't get to a phone. You can chime in, hashtag Giants chat. And fans, don't forget, Big Blue Kickoff Live is brought to you by DraftKings, the daily fantasy sports destination. At DraftKings, you can play as often as you want with no season-long commitment. Go to DraftKings.com, enter promo code CONTACT to play for free today. DraftKings Fantasy Sports, free to play. G.A. Mangus, Jarrell Adams, tight ends coach at South Carolina, will be joining us shortly. Mini camp gets underway Friday. And, Paul, there were a few transactions that the Giants made, mainly because this is the time of the year you're trying to finalize that 90-man roster to make some space for some of the undrafted free agents. And the Giants announced that they waived tight end Jerome Cunningham as well as safety G.J. Kinney. Cunningham saw some time. Kinney was a former quarterback who then transitioned to safety.
Right, and Cunningham in particular kind of melts into our topic when talking about Jarrell Adams, sixth-round draft pick, because the Giants did have a bulk of tight ends that they were going into the spring with, including guys like Matt Lacoste and, of course, Ty and Donnell and Will Johnson, if you consider him to be a tight end, the guy they signed during the offseason from the Pittsburgh Steelers. And, of course, as we said, drafting Adams. So, you know, there's only one ball and only so many tight ends you can get out there to work out during the course of these mini camps. So the Giants, I guess, have decided that they're going to pass on Cunningham at this point, and he's off the roster, and that just means more reps for the rookie.
And it's not necessarily a surprise considering Adams was drafted as well as Darian Thompson. So they basically removed two players from the roster, Paul, two
right.
positions that they essentially addressed in the draft.
Yes, exactly. And I will tell you now, again, rookie minicamp begins tomorrow, but the list of Giants invitees, the tryouts, the guys who are drafted, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's an interesting list. We won't know until guys pass physicals if they're actually going to be able to participate. That's something that always needs to happen. Guys physically have to be on the
yep.
property, and tomorrow is when that all begins. So, who knows? The names you've been reading out there on the internet, who knows? We're not going to go over any names. But what I am going to tell you is I do believe that of this weekend crop, a lot of interesting wide receivers and a lot of interesting defensive ends. That I will say. But as far as any names, hey, until guys pass physicals, it doesn't really amount to a whole much.
That's why the Giants haven't released anything official.
Correct.
And once again,
nor will we.
Correct. And minicamp doesn't begin until tomorrow, so they have the time now to make sure that everybody passes the physicals and so forth before they let anybody out on the field. That's what
Correct.
Obviously is going to go on before minicamp gets underway. But the whole point of minicamp, as you just alluded to, Paul, is you got nothing to lose by bringing in a lot of these players. It's not just about the six draft picks. It's about guys that are on tryouts, guys that are undrafted free agents, and opportunities. To prove that, hey, maybe they deserve an invite to training camp.
Well, that's what it is. You get your rookies who've been drafted through the draft. Then you get another crop of folks who are undrafted rookie free agents who are actually signed. Okay, they get a few dollars because they're signed. You absolutely want to bring them to camp later on this summer. Then you get a whole crop of other folks who make out the rest of the list who are simply tryouts. They're people who are invited and said, hey, do you want to come here to the facility? We'll give you a workout. We'll see what you got. And maybe, there are no promises to any of those folks. They're listed as tryouts. They just get a chance to come here and show up. And if they catch somebody's eye, then, they're hoping and praying that they get that undrafted rookie contract that allows them then to come to minicamp and summer camp and stuff like that. So there are layers layers of possession, and these tryouts are not possessed in any way. They're simply coming here for a visit.
I think the biggest difference between all these different labels that you mentioned, Paul, it's really the financial commitment that the team makes to these players. That's what really differentiates.
Well, no, because
the
tryout guys, a tryout guy, for example, could come to your facility. And because there are no rights acquired by any kind of contract, he's just here for a tryout, he could actually leave and tomorrow go to like the Redskins or the Jets and try out there too.
Well, that's
there are no rights involved.
Meaning you haven't made a financial commitment as you would with perhaps a rookie or somebody else who has a more firm invitation other than
a contract.
Somebody. Yes, exactly. But
okay.
I'm saying some guys
if you
could
want to
be
refer
in the mix.
To it as financial, that's fine. Bottom line is they don't have a contractual commitment to where their rights are owned and they're responsible to the team. That's the bottom line. Tryouts, you could go and have a guy, a rookie, try out at four or five different teams if he feels like he's got the time and he can make all those hopping and bopping stops over the course of the next couple of days. It's not unusual for guys sometimes to do that.
Because under the CBA, NFL teams have about a seven-week window to hold their three-day rookie minicamp. That's how it works based on what happened in the last collective bargaining agreement. Well, one player that we know has been selected by the New York Giants, and there's no question surrounding that, is Jarrell Adams. And we are now joined by a very special guest here on Big Blue Kickoff Live, a man who knows a great deal about Jarrell Adams, considering he coached him at South Carolina, and that is former South Carolina quarterbacks and tight ends coach G.A. Mangus. Coach, Lance Meadow, Paul DiTino here with you on Giants.com, Big Blue Kickoff Live. We appreciate the time. How's everything?
Oh, it's great. Great. I appreciate it.
Coach, thanks so much for joining us. And Jarrell Adams, of course, is a mystery to a lot of folks here in New York, a sixth-round pick on the late third day of the draft. We hear a lot of the draft nicks talk about his frame, his size, his potential to get down the seam. We know he ran the fastest among all the tight ends of the combine. But give us a thumbnail before we start asking about specifics of what kind of player the Giants drafted.
Well, today's modern day tight end, you know, what you want, the guy that can get vertical and create matchup issues on linebackers and safe in the box type safeties. At 6'6", anywhere from 240 to 255, he's weighed through the years and not lost his speed. He can really run. He's long. He's got a huge catch radius. And the big thing I was most proud of him is where he learned the blocking to be the kind of complete tight end. You know, there's not a bunch of those left anymore. They're either kind of, you know, large wide outs or they're the blocking guy that can't get vertical down the field.
Sure.
It's hard to find those guys in today's game. And he's a guy that can do that and really made a big stride in the offseason before his senior year last year to really become the complete tight end. And he had his best year blocking yet. And I think you'll get nothing but better at that as time goes.
Coach, similar to another tight end that's on the Giants, Larry Donnell, who made the transition from quarterback to tight end. I know that Adams started out for the majority of his high school career and football career as a quarterback and then made the transition to tight end. What was that process like when he first arrived to South Carolina and the majority of his background was mainly as a quarterback?
Yeah, you know, very small town. You know, Jarrell's from, you talking about a Scotch Branch, South Carolina, to the big city. I sent him a text when he got drafted. I said, don't let the big city eat you up now.
Oh, we're not that bad, Coach.
There's no buildings. There's no buildings more than one story high and down there. So I said he's going, you know, completely different planet here. But he, as small schools go in high school, point is, you're going to get your best player and try to get the ball in his hands. And that's where we're seeing this in the game of football now. There's a lot of quarterbacks. And I've always kind of been a guy that thinks in a recruiting class, if you sign 25 guys, if you go sign four or five quarterbacks of all different shapes and sizes, they'll all find a way, because they're always good athletes. He obviously at 6'6", 240 pounds, is not a quarterback. In per se, but he was always a great athlete, and they did that in high school just to get the ball in his hands. So, the transition really, that's what he wanted to play. He also played defensive end. He was a heck of a defensive end and pass rusher, and easily could have played that for us in South Carolina.
Really?
Had he chosen that? Oh, absolutely. I mean, he looks like a defensive end. He's what you want. He's what you look like when you get off the bus, and that's what you want him to look like. And he was a heck of a pass rusher, and just, you know, he wants to have the ball in his hands, and I think it goes back to, you know, because of high school, that's what he enjoyed, and that's what he's good at, and he's got good hands, I think the quarterback thing will help him in the intellect portion of the game, you know, down the road.
Now, the Giants have some tight ends already ahead of him. We mentioned Donnell and then Will Ty, pass-catching tight end, a prospect
sure.
in Matt Lacoste, who I'm sure you're aware of, a guy who came out of school last year. So where do you believe that, Adams will make his niche as he tries to make the 53? Does he have to be the inline guy? Could he be an H-back potentially? Is he a move tight end, you think, for the Giants? And then what are his possibilities of playing some special teams? You know as well as I do, that can be the difference in making the back end of a roster.
No question, and I'm glad you brought that up, because that was the first thing I was going to mention is you know, Jarrell and all tight ends, all players, and I haven't changed. I've been coaching college football for 24 years, and I've always told the kids, you know, if especially in this day and age where these kids don't want, I'm not playing special teams. I don't want to play special teams. And you almost got to beg them to get out there. And I've got a lot of good friends in the business that are special teams coordinators, and they know exactly what I'm talking about. and tight ends are guys that's a must. Those body types, and when they can run, they have to be special teams players and should be very good at it. And, you know, it is truly one-third of the game. I know you hear that from coaches all the time, but – you know, I never, when I was young in the business, I didn't worry about any of that either. I didn't like it. I didn't think it was near as important. Then I became a head coach, and you realize you got to do that. And so Jarrell was easy to put that on the tight ends from Buster Anderson, who was a great special teams player, now playing for the Niners. And he and Jarrell played together for 3 years. And Jarrell came finally a couple years ago and said, "Hey, I want to play special teams. I want to cover kicks." And at 6'6", 240, you don't see a lot of guys go cover.
No, you don't.
And I can tell you. Yeah. And Joe Robinson, who's a wonderful special teams coordinator now at Texas Tech, he you know, his opinion matters. And he said Jarrell's one of the best. He's been the coordinator at LSU and South Carolina and all over the place, all over the country. And he said Jarrell's one of the best kickoff cover guys he's ever had. Wow. And the best part about it was Jarrell volunteered for that. He knew we needed some help. We were having some problems covering kicks. And he went to Joe himself. And when you put that advice on him and you tell him you need to go do that and it can help you make an NFL roster, it's amazing how the motivation sometimes changes people. And I think that's a way that all players, not just Jarrell in particular, but all players, you know, you start getting down to those last two spots on the 53. If you can't play teams, you're looking for a job the next day.
G.A. Mangus, who coached Jarrell Adams at South Carolina, the Giants' rookie tight end draft choice. And, G.A., I got to be honest with you, I had not heard any of the draft experts or any of the writers even discuss his special teams prowess until you just told us that now. And as we both have just expressed, that could be the golden nugget that helps him make this team.
I don't think there's any doubt about it. And, you know, one of the first things I hit him up with right after he got drafted, after congratulating him and his family and everything, and was proud of him, and the first thing I said is, make sure you continue the special teams. And, you know, again, when you're 6'6", 240, and you can run in the 4.6s the way he can, and as long as he is, there's other things he can do special teams-wise besides just covering kicks. And I think, you know, as you're learning, as you're progressing, you're learning the pro game. Now, he, you know, our offense at South Carolina is predominant. You know, we still teach 1 to 2 to 3 progression reads and all the things that, you know, NFL coaches say, you know, us college guys are, you know, not developing the guys and teaching them the NFL game. That's not true at South Carolina, you know, with Coach Spurrier. And,
sure.
And it's a pro-style offense.
Yeah, yeah.
We still recruit tight ends and play tight ends. And so Jarrell has a knowledge of that, but as it goes to the next level in the NFL, while he's learning that, I really believe the special teams is something that can keep him around until it's his opportunity to go play, you know, tight end for the Giants.
You know, I'm sorry, Lance, I want to cut in one more second here, though, but at 6'6", it seems to me he'd have a chance to block kicks with a large wingspan. I don't know if he ever did any of that at South Carolina, but also it seems to me if you said he could have played defensive end, it means he likes to hit people. So that's not a bad thing either on specials.
Yeah, the physicality, you're exactly right, and that's where he became, you know, when he didn't do so well blocking when he was young, it's just a deal of you got to want to do it. You know, I always tell the tight ends, you know, I use Dennis Rodman. Dennis Rodman was never the biggest guy, the strongest guy, this or that. I said, but he wanted to get a rebound more than anybody. And to me, blocking as a tight end is as much want to as it is anything. You either want to block or you don't want to block. And Jarrell was, you know, I said, you played DN, you're a physical kid when you want to be. So do it. And this year was, you know, the tape doesn't lie. And it was his best tape. All scouts I talked to through the process all mentioned how his blocking had gotten better and he showed some physicality. And that's what you want. And he can bring that physicality to teams as well. He did not block kicks, but he easily could have been. We had another kid that's going to – he's going to be a senior, Darius English. Happens to be the same size that has 42-inch vertical. He was our field goal block guy, the jumper. But Jarrell could easily be a jumper, was a basketball player in high school as well, and he could be a jumper and block kicks. And like I said, with his skills as an athlete, there's a lot of things he can do, and I'm sure the Giants will see that shortly.
Absolutely, and Coach, I think you brought up a very interesting point about how the desire is really half the battle when it comes to playing special teams as well as blocking. It's not something that is necessarily easy to teach. You like it when a player has the motivation to do that. With that being said, from at least an X's and O's standpoint, and you talked about how he embraces physicality, what is it about his technique, though, that makes him such an effective blocker?
Well, he's got long arms and quick feet. And so his positioning, you know, at the beginning, it was just in teaching him, it was all more just to understand the positioning and the geometry of blocking. And I've always taught it that way. And it seems simple, but it, you know, as you're learning all the techniques and using your hands, you know, especially when you're from a small school, small town, you play three different positions, you know, you play quarterback, you're not really blocking. And using your hands, that's always something that takes time in O-linemen and D-linemen. And that's why you see the development of that position sometimes takes a little longer than others, because they do have to learn to use their hands. But in the meantime, he learned the positioning. And then with his length and everything in time, as his last year, he really began to use his hands and became an effective blocker. And I think just that, you know, his length and his wingspan and all those things are, you know, sometimes even if you're a half a second late with some footwork because of your wingspan, you can make up for it. That's why those things are so important, and why the NFL guys and scouts, they love all those measurements and everything, because it can give you, you know, an extra advantage. You know, maybe if you're, you know, a little deficient here, that can make up for some mistakes. And Jarrell has that, and will continue to get better and learn the intricacies of the little things that it can take to continue his progression as a blocker.
Coach, before we let you go, you mentioned he had a career year this past season, and he had about 28 receptions. So his numbers did improve from at least an offensive standpoint each and every year. But I know he hinted at it, and a number of people that at least have followed South Carolina football, that perhaps the numbers went up and down as a result of maybe the quarterback play at South Carolina. Now that he has Eli Manning, number one, what do you think Eli Manning will do for a player like that who has that size and that versatility? And is there validity behind perhaps the quarterback play influencing perhaps his numbers over the course of his career there at South Carolina?
No, first and foremost, he shouldn't have said that. And I think if he had it to do over, I don't know that he makes that statement. We did play four quarterbacks last year. We had a lot of injuries. But for the previous 3 years, Connor Shaw and Dylan Thompson, you know, are playing in the NFL right now. So there was two NFL quarterbacks for the first 3.5 years of his career that he got a chance to catch balls from. So, you know, I think is what happened early in the process. We play a lot of two tight end sets, which he and Rory Anderson, who plays for the Niners, you know, they got a lot. They split a lot of time. So there's enough, you know, there's not enough balls to go around in this
sure.
game. That's
yeah.
that's a, you know, when you have good players, you have Alshon Jeffrey, you have Marcus Lattimore, you have Jarrell, and you have Buster.
Yep.
It's why we won 11 games 3 years in a row.
Exactly.
You know, but you got to make everybody happy. So this year, you know, Jarrell, obviously, you know, the biggest reason you look at it, we were 3-9. For a reason. We weren't very good, and we had a lot of injuries. We weren't very good, you know, on the defensive side of the ball, and we weren't good enough on the offensive side of the ball, and you play four quarterbacks with injuries, and that's what happens. And so we had Farrell Cooper caught, you know, had a career year. He caught 70-some-odd balls and had 1,000 yards receiving. So the quarterbacks were doing something good, obviously. And I just think that, you know, when you only have a couple of players' weapons, you know, he got double-teamed. They put a safety over top of him and linebackers and got physical with him on the ball. And he really showed a lot. He had a heck of a year considering, you know, what was going on and the way people defended us. And it was, you know, to take away your two best players, which obviously he was one of them. But I think the future is bright for him. I think he's just scratching the surface of how good he can be. And I think his confidence level of how good he can be, when Buster went to the NFL and kind of he became the guy, I saw his confidence level really shoot up. And I think he can really have a great career in the NFL.
G.A. Mangus, who coached Jarrell Adams, the Giants' sixth-round pick. He was the quarterbacks and tight ends coach at South Carolina. Coach, greatly appreciate the time and the insight. Thanks so much for spending a few minutes with us.
Thank you so much.
No problem. You guys have a great day.
You
great
as well.
Stuff.
All right, so G.A. Mangus right there providing some real good intel on his special teams play as well.
And, you know, the thing is, Lance, no matter how many cut-ups you watch, okay, you're not going to get inside the player's box. You know, and his position coach is going to get inside the box. He's going to know what the guy's heart is, what the guy's mentality is, you know, some of the other stuff that you're not going to see on cut-ups. Hey, no matter how many cut-ups I watch of this guy, I'm not going to see his special teams work. Nobody's giving me those cut-ups.
Yeah.
You know, and to me, I don't think there's any question. What we heard from his coach, his position coach, about wanting to play special teams and then doing a real good job covering in special teams. When I said that's the golden nugget, I'm going to tell you right now, if that turns out to be the case, if he shows that at the New York Giants facility this summer, he's making the team.
Well, this was something that you and I discussed on yesterday's program, where we were starting to, you know, speculate a little about how there's a lot of roster battles that are going to take place because mm-hmm. they aimed in the draft to bolster the back end of the depth chart. And what did we say? Special teams play, especially with the running backs, is going to separate the men from the boys. Same thing with the tight ends. Four tight ends here. If Adams stands out as a special teamer, you know, that's the golden way to solidify, perhaps, if they decide to keep three tight ends, one of those three spots.
And it was clear to me, too, by listening to the coach, that his arrow's been going up.
Yes.
He has developed and developed and developed, and he expects a lot more. When he says, I think he's only scratched the surface, that says the upside is really good. So I'm now anxious to see this guy on the field, you know, in person.
When you look at Adams' numbers, 2011, he did 1 year of prep school at Fork Union Military Academy. Then 2012, first year at South Carolina, he played in 9 games, had 4 catches for 90 yards and a touchdown, 13 games, 1 start, 13 catches, 187, 2 scores. 2014, 13 games, 5 starts. You can see his playing time continues to increase. And then this past season, 12 games, 9 starts. His best numbers, 28 catches, 421 yards, 3 touchdowns. So you could see, just based on the statistics, let alone the film, he continually had a bigger role in the offense.
And do we dare mention that the coach said he could have played defensive end for the Gamecocks? Do we have another Nikita Whitlock on our hands who could see snaps on the defensive line?
We may be getting ahead of ourselves, but I'm sure if you're Steve Spagnuolo right now, Paul, you're not complaining about maybe the experimentation that could go around during the course of the offseason. But what I think that speaks to, Paul, that's just another example of his versatility. And that can't hurt a team. If you have a player that wants to block, wants to play special teams, and also has the mindset of a quarterback, let's not forget, because Coach Mangus said having the intellect of playing the quarterback position is only going to help him further understand the NFL playbook. And then on top of that, the desire to maybe show that he can be a defensive contributor allows the Giants to certainly toy with where they see him best fit.
The binoculars are out.
Well,
I will be watching.
Yes,
I will be watching very carefully.
Yeah, but I think that's why it's nice to get the perspective of somebody who's worked with him closely over the last few years, because like you said, you know, you can listen to the experts all you want, you can look at the box scores all you want, but it's the mindset and practice that he just spoke to, which is telling that, hey, this guy likes to go out there and embrace physicality.
And to be fair, a guy like Eli Apple, who played for Ohio State, I must have watched 4 of his games just on TV regularly this year without even looking at the cut-ups. I mean, before I sat down in the offseason and looked at Eli Apple's tape, I already had seen him almost half of his season and then his bowl game too. You know, because Ohio State was always on prime time, and not that South Carolina isn't on TV a ton, but I'll be honest, I didn't go out of my way to watch South Carolina games during the season. You know, when I started doing homework, it was, okay, now let's see who's on South Carolina. I got to go look at them for the first time. So, you know, these guys, you know, who were drafted third day and maybe from a program that you haven't seen a lot of on television, they're virtual unknowns. And so this is great not only to be able to get the position coach's perspective, but to me, just to be able to get the volume of information about a guy who you haven't seen a ton of?
201-939-4513 is the telephone number. We are opening up the phone lines for those of you who want to weigh in on the Giants draft picks, the start of minicamp, as well as anything else to do with the New York Football Giants. If you can't get to the phone, hit us up, hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. He's Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Meadow. We also want to remind you that Big Blue Kickoff Live is brought to you by DraftKings. Now, if you've never played on DraftKings, it's changing the way we play fantasy sports. Just pick your contest, pick your players. If you win, pick up your cash. Simple as that. Go to DraftKings.com. Enter promo code CONTACT to claim your free entry today. DraftKings Fantasy Sports, free to play. We will certainly be getting to your phone calls here in a second, but the one thing I do want to mention, Paul, and you briefly addressed this at the top of the show, Jerome Cunningham with him being waived, now you start to see, okay, who may be in this cluster of tight ends that's going to be starting to fight for a roster spot. And we know Larry Donnell returning from the neck injury, Will Ty making a name for himself late last season. You also have Matt Lacoste, who a year ago, if we turn the clock back, was one of the players out of rookie minicamp to certainly make a name for himself there. And now you have Jarrell Adams, who we just heard about. So, you know, you have a mixture of youth. This is not a great deal of experience in that group. But you have, I think, some players that scratched the surface last season. And then you have a guy like Jarrell Adams. You know, if he can prove to be that all-around tight end, which the Giants are continuing to look for, you know, certainly could put himself in a very good position to solidify a spot here.
Well, guys like Larry Donnell and Will Ty, who have proven that they can be functional receiving wide receivers in this league but need to improve their blocking, will probably catch notice. If Adams comes in and blocks up a storm, they're going to see that. And maybe he just helps push them to become better blockers. Maybe Matt Lacoste, a developmental tight end who's on this roster right now, gets pushed by a guy like Adams. Look, we talk about this all the time. It's not just about improving the guys who are going to start, but it's also about improving the back end of the depth chart. And competition is good. That's, I mean, it just, you can't say it any simpler than that.
No doubt about that. Got a question on Twitter related to the tight end, so I want to get this before we open up the phone lines. And this is from at E underscore the chosen one. If Adams does make the team, how many tight ends do you guys think we keep going into the season? Three has normally been the magic number.
Yeah.
And that was what they kept last season.
And basically, you guys all know when you get down to your final 53, sometimes you got to rob Peter to pay Paul because one of your positions is gimpy. And you don't know about the health of certain guys, and you're worried about depth. And guess what? Now we got to keep an extra guy at that position because we're not sure about it. So you got to rob it from somebody else. I agree with you, Lance. I think three is probably what they'll go with. But you remember a couple of years ago, they actually did go with four, and they carried four through the whole season. I mean, you just don't know.
Well,
I'll say this. If a couple of these guys, let's say Lacoste, shows that he could play specials, or Ty shows that he could play specials, and then you got Adams, who could show he could play specials. Maybe you keep four again if two of these guys become important special teams guys.
Well, the only thing I was going to add to that is if Will Johnson makes the team, he can be your fourth tight end, as well as the fullback. So then you see
he's making the team, I think.
No, I'm not doubting that. I mean, right now we don't know what's going to happen with the roster spots. So, you know, we don't want to say everybody's solidified. How will he be utilized, I think, makes the conversation interesting, Paul, because then you could say, well, we know he could play three different positions. So therefore, he's our additional tight end, as well as the three guys that we have penciled into those spots. So that could change how they factor in the tight end position.
A lot of things still to be determined, but I tell you what, it's going to be fun watching that competition now that we know more about Adams. This guy's coming to play.
All right. The callers, hopefully they'll come to chat and play over the next few minutes here on the program. Let's open up the lines here. We got Jeff in Rhode Island. He gets us going on Thursday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. Jeff, what's happening?
Hey, Paul.
Hi.
How you doing, guy? How you guys doing today?
Doing well,
Matt,
Jeff.
How you doing today?
Okay, doing well. Hanging in there. Appreciate that.
I was wondering, there was an interesting article in the Daily News today written by Ebenezer Samuel, and Weston Richburg had some things to say about his offensive line mates, and I was wondering if you guys had read that article.
I had not seen it, so I'm not going to comment because I didn't see it yet.
Okay.
I was alerted that I should take a look at it, but I didn't have time before the show.
Okay. Well, Richburg is what he's saying is that it doesn't seem as if his some of his line mates are doing what they need to do to stay at that level, that a lot of them just seem to be happy to be there. And as a Giants fan, that's like the last thing I wanted to hear. I know you can't comment on it because you haven't read it, but
you know what?
Here's
what I will comment on. I think Weston Richburg is very quickly becoming one of the leaders on this team. Justin Pugh has already stepped forward and started to become one of those guys. Richburg is joining him in that group. Much like, you remember, Chris Snee was quiet about it, but he was clearly one of the leaders along that offensive line, as was David Deal. I see Richburg melding into that role. So if he wants to step up and say something that he sees that's deficient, I'm going to support that because I think that's important for a guy like that to assert himself. But that's just a generic comment, not specifically related to what you saw.
I agree with you. You know, I agree with you 100%. I just felt that, you know, given the state of the offensive line, it's not something I want to be hearing, that's all. And
Remember, it is only early May, and if he sees something wrong and he's able to step up about it and say something about it, maybe that gets fixed by the time minicamp comes around with the veterans in a couple of weeks, and then maybe there's nothing to say. So this is a good time to complain if you got a problem.
And you'd want to hear that a player would have the confidence to address that with his teammates as opposed to keep it hidden. Right. The other thing that I just wanted to clarify, Jeff, and you're right that there was an article written, but it stemmed from, and I haven't read this either, like Paul, CBS Sports veteran columnist Peter Prisco had a roundtable discussion with a group of four offensive linemen about the entire NFL landscape. It wasn't just a one-on-one with Weston Richburg about the Giants. Richburg was one of four offensive linemen to take part in this discussion. He was talking about his experiences being in the NFL, but it wasn't just about the state of the Giants offensive line. It was about offensive linemen across the NFL and how they're seeing their work ethic and so forth. Just for clarification.
I wish there's video on that because I'd like to see it. So many times things are taken out of context and then it means something entirely different than what was really said.
Well, perhaps that's the case. I hope it's the case. I hope something was taken out of context because I think we'll all agree that we need improvement on the right side of that offensive line, that's for sure. Okay, guys, you have a good day, okay?
Hi, Jeff. Appreciate the phone call. Titans guard Chance Warmack, Bears guard Kyle Long, and their tackle Bobby Massey were the three other offensive linemen to take part in this with Richburg. And we certainly appreciate the phone call, Jeff.
Good
stuff. That just at least gives you some context of that article. Let's move along here on the phone lines. We got EJ in South Florida. EJ, what's happening?
How's it going, guys? How you doing?
Doing well, EJ. How's things with you?
Good, thank you. I just want to touch on two quick things. I'm not going to be a pain and hog up the line as usual, but I'm just being honest.
Well, we appreciate that.
Go
we're
ahead.
Not complaining.
No.
Go ahead.
We're glad to hear from you. Please.
Yeah. You're not on our, you know, ban list already that you have that reputation, but it's okay.
It's coming. But,
okay. You know, I'm glad you warned us.
Just one thing I'm worried about, the lack of veteran leadership on the safety end. Now, I understand we have a lot of good young talent. I love what we did in the draft. But to me, there is only one option out at safety. I don't want to be one of those guys. He's a free agent, sign him. But to me, Antrell Roll, even though he's long in the tooth now, his value would be such more than just a player. Landon Collins is not truly getting what he needs to succeed. He needs someone to teach him the ropes, in my opinion. And who better to show him the Giant way than Antrell Roll? And I understand numbers got to match up and all that, all the business side of the NFL. But it's been said that Antrell Roll says he wants to come back. And I just think if there's anybody that could teach Landon Collins, even the new, you know, safety young guys, the Giants way and how to play safety in the NFL, it's a Super Bowl champ like himself. What do you guys think about a possibility, if the numbers are right, to have him come back and just be like the old man, the voice?
Yeah, well, I addressed this yesterday, and I would think that it's more logical to assume he's on the radar, but not right now. It seems like they want to give these young guys as much room to grow and as much of an opportunity as possible. But again, I will refer to 2011 when Deion Grant was a free agent. He had, you know, his contract with the Giants was up. He sat out there for a while. Nobody called him. Training camp came around. The Giants decided that because of injuries and some of the folks on the roster, they needed Deion Grant back. He came in, became part of the three safety package, and the Giants won the Super Bowl. And he was a very critical, critical player on that Super Bowl championship team. Make no mistake about it. Could Antrell Roll's scenario play out the same way? I think it could, but I'm not going to say that he's definitely coming back, and I'm not going to say he's definitely not coming back. What I'm saying is there is precedent for that possibility to exist.
And I mentioned yesterday also E.J. Stevie Brown, Craig Dahl came back last season. So, yes, as Paul mentioned, there's a track record of former safeties coming back. But, you know, this is the one thing I will say. I won't rule it out either, but you have to understand, it's a two-way stream. You know, the Giants could very well reach out to Antrell Roll. That doesn't mean that, you know, he wants to come in and assume that role. I don't want to speak for him. I just want to throw that out. Often when, as fans, you look at the makeup of the roster, it's a no-brainer. You bring back Antrell Roll. The player has to want to come back, too. Let's not forget about that. I think there's two ways to this discussion. The other thing I'll add is don't overlook, you know, Dave Merritt, who's the most senior member of this coaching staff, who's worked with a variety of safeties under various head coaches during his Giants tenure.
Yes.
So he has a wealth of knowledge.
Various coordinators.
Various coordinators and various coaches, you know, now Coughlin, now McAdoo. So, you know, you put that into consideration. You know, he's also seen a lot of football, too, and that's a good voice for these young guys to have as well.
I'm just afraid because Eli Manning is getting older, and we don't really have much room for him to just keep having rookie growing pains. Let's face it, most of our safeties, even Landon Collins, only coming off 1 year, they're most rookie growing pains. You don't want to have that with a 38, or whoever, how old, Keith? 35 now. I don't know where the heck I got 38.
Yeah, don't push it, please. Hey, I'm with you in that I said all offseason I thought the Giants should have brought in a veteran free agent safety. You know, Eric Weddle was a guy who certainly was at the top of the list as far as I was concerned. And for whatever reason, they didn't go that way, which makes one believe, because they had the cap room to do it, it makes one believe that they really want to get a better look at these young guys before making a decision. Yeah. At least that's the way it appears.
Well, plus they also just drafted a safety, too. So
yes,
I think that's
did.
Further evidence that says they're going in a younger direction and they believe in this youth movement. I think if you look at some of the dots and you connect them, you know, that's, to me, the best takeaway from that.
Thanks, EJ.
Thank you, guys.
All right, EJ, you got it. Appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. Eddie is in North Carolina. Eddie, what's happening?
Guys, how you doing today? Thanks for taking the call.
Thanks for making it,
Thank
Eddie.
Thank you.
Doing well. How's everything with you?
Good. Paul, this question is basically for you. First of all, I want to say I like what the Giants did in the draft. They targeted certain players to fill certain needs. The only problem I had was the third-round pick because, Paul, before the draft, you said that the Giants used to use George Young's philosophy of drafting the strength of the draft.
Right.
I think we all agree that the strength of the draft, the position, was defensive tackle. In the third round, the Giants had Jonathan Bullard from Florida. They had Shelton Day from Notre Dame and Ridgeway from Texas. I think the Giants are going to need a defensive tackle because you don't know what's going to happen with Hankins next year. Are the Giants going to pay him? They haven't paid defensive tackles in the past. Cornelius Griffin, Barry Cofield, Linville Joseph. So it seems to be another position that they don't value. And I think because of that, they should have taken one of those defensive tackles in the third round.
I think it is a fair comment that you've just made, and I'm not going to deny this. I was a tad surprised myself when they drafted the free safety in the third round. I think really what it comes down to, and from talking to other people even post-draft, Thompson had a really strong second-round grade on him. And you know as well as I do, if a guy has such a high grade and he drops all of a sudden to where, oh, my goodness, he's sticking out like a sore thumb. He's way, way up there, and we're picking here. We got to go grab that guy. And I know that the Giants have done that in the past, and that has been part of the Giants' philosophy. George Young, in spite of what you said, and you're right, I have preached this for many, many years. George also always said that if a guy suddenly comes down for no apparent reason, because there's no black marks on Thompson at all. He's got a good portfolio across the board. If he is rated so highly and you're picking down here and he's rated so high up here, you got to grab good players, because George's other philosophy was get your hands on as many quality players as you can. And if they are sure that this kid in the third round, Darian Thompson from Boise State, is a can't-miss to make the roster and has a chance to compete for a starting job, then I would submit to you that while defensive tackle is a need and they should bolster depth there, a guy that they probably drafted in the third round there was going to be a rotational player who would be competing behind Snacks Harrison and competing behind Hankins. He probably wasn't going to start. Thompson may be a starter opening day. So I would say to you, their value board probably said they had to go there. But I think your point is well taken, and I do not dismiss it.
All right, well, look, I hope you're right. I just hope that next year at this time, you know, we're not saying, gee, we lost Hankins, maybe we should have taken a defensive tackle there. And the only other thing is that we had so many safeties on the roster. It's just unfortunate that between Cooper Taylor and Thompson and some of the other guys, not one of those free safeties was a ball-hawking free safety that they needed, and that's Jerry Reese's fault.
Well, you know, I can only tell you this, okay? They believe in the talent of those guys, and they think that, well, at least they certainly did before Burry got hurt 2 years in a row, that he could actually be that guy. We're going to find out. Look, they just drafted Thompson with the anticipation now that he may be that guy. I can only tell you this, and I'm being honest. I'm going to wait and see before I start making judgments about, you know, what's happened at the free safety spot. I would not mind if a veteran were here. I promoted it for many months. If Antrell Ward walks in here in August, who knows? He may be starting week one against the Cowboys if he comes in. It could happen. And so there's a lot of chapters to be written in this book, but I understand your feelings. You're making sense. There's logic to what you've said. And we're just going to have to let it play out. I will also add one other thing to you to before you go. The list of rookies and tryouts and undrafted guys coming in here this weekend, healthy in wide receivers, healthy in defensive linemen. Okay? Just keep that in mind as you see the list when it comes out tomorrow and you find out which guys pass their physicals and who competes. Healthy in wide receivers, healthy in defensive linemen.
And also,
all
keep
right,
it.
But I know Lance has been saying the whole time that the Giants like versatility and defensive linemen, and Jonathan Bullard can play every position on the defensive line.
I liked him coming out of the draft.
Well,
appreciate the call.
And Eddie, appreciate the phone call. And I have said that time and time again. But what I also wouldn't rule out is, based on how Spags uses defensive ends, you know, they could experiment with moving some of those guys to the inside too. For example, like Double O, you know, I think he could potentially be toyed around with and moved inside and outside.
I wouldn't do that.
I think it's possible.
I wouldn't do that.
I wouldn't necessarily rule it out.
Don't like his skill set for that.
Well, all I'm saying is Spags has a tendency where he has mixed and match guys, and they may use this offseason to determine that they can get four defensive ends on the field at the same time, which we've seen in the past. That's a possibility. It's not a definitive, but I think it's a possibility that they could experiment with that.
There's always a possibility if they feel short going into training camp or even after the first couple of weeks. I wouldn't be surprised if all of a sudden a phone call goes out to Colin Jenkins,
who's still out there. Yeah, and he knows the system based on what he did last season. That's certainly a possibility as well. And the other thing that Eddie had mentioned when he was listing the safeties, you know, about not necessarily being ball hawks, I mean, the jury's still out on a lot of these guys, Paul. I mean, they have barely been on the football.
Right.
So who's to say that they're not ball hawks?
That's why I said let's wait and see.
I mean, I'm not saying that they are going to be ball hawks, but it's so early to tell, even though some of these guys have been on the roster for a year or two, mainly because they haven't had any game experience. Like Mykel Thompson, let's see him get on the field before we judge what he's going to be. Bennett Jackson, same thing. And, you know, the other thing is, while there are players that have been ball hawks or haven't been ball hawks in college, you can't guarantee that they're always going to translate to the NFL as well. So that's why you have to see what they could do on an NFL field before you just judge them what they did or didn't do in college. Let's head back to the phone lines.
Interesting number, I just want to say, Lance, before you go back to the phone calls. Reese's Senior Bowl just put out a tweet, and this goes to what we were saying for months. 18 Reese's Senior Bowlers went in the fourth round this year. That's more than half. of the fourth rounders were in the Senior Bowl, and we told you this was a fertile draft, especially on defense. Now, I didn't look at this list, but I guarantee you most of those guys are on defense if we were to call it up, because there were so many make-it-grade guys that you could get in the fourth round this year. And, you know, just – I want to stress to you, I thought this was one of the most entertaining, interesting drafts in recent memory. I did see, by the way, updated numbers on the whole 3 days, and they were better. The first day didn't turn out so well.
You're talking about ratings now.
Yes, TV ratings. Yeah. TV ratings for the first round went down. TV ratings for the whole 3 days of the draft went up, and apparently the third day was like a really good day. Which is pretty wild, because most people, you think, don't care about the third day.
It's on the weekend. Maybe they're not hanging
Saturday
around.
Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, I mean, I think you could make the same argument, though, with a Thursday or Friday. And plus, we talked about the additional technology now in which you can follow the draft. There's a variety of reasons why I'm sure those numbers fluctuated. Lauren is in Florida. Lauren, what's happening?
And Lance.
How are we doing?
Hey, I just wanted to make a couple comments. I definitely like this draft, these draft picks. I think it's kind of like 2007. These guys are going to contribute, you know, just as much. I think a lot of callers, a lot of fans are overreacting on some of these picks. Like offensive line, I think Bobby Hart, I'm going to make a bold prediction. I think he's going to start at right tackle next year or this year with a couple guys there, you know, on the right side. Anyhow, I think Goodson's a good pickup. Remember couple years ago we picked up Kennard, and, you know, a lot of people were talking a lot about him, saying, oh, that was a bad pick, and look how he turned out for us. And I think Goodson is going to be a great pickup. But as far as the offensive line goes, I don't feel too bad with that we didn't draft anybody, just for the simple fact that, you know, we do have a lot of guys we picked up in the offseason. And I think Bobby Hart's there. He reminds me of Deal. And I just kind of want to, you know, get your input on that. I mean, I know it's good to have depth in the offensive line, but I really feel that we have the guys there. And all the picks we picked this year were necessary.
All right, well, Bobby Hart, by everyone who I've talked to, in addition to my personal opinion, will compete for a starting job with John Jerry at right guard. I don't think he's a tackle, but I think he can play it in a pinch if necessary. And they've certainly shown that in practice, that he's going to swing from both spots because they want him to be able to do it. However, I do believe the Giants need more fortification on the offensive line. Marshall Newhouse was brought here to be a backup tackle.
Right.
Okay? He had to start the entire season last year. And I think the results show that he's a competent NFL player, but if you want to be a playoff caliber team, I think you understand that Marshall Newhouse needs to be a backup. He doesn't need to be a starter. And that spot, in my opinion, still needs to be addressed. Hopefully it will be over the course of the next several months. So I would not agree with you that all the answers for the offensive line are in-house. I think they still got some more shopping to do.
Okay. And another point, too, with the safeties, I remember a couple years ago everybody kept saying we got to get rid of Antrell Rowe. You know, he's out of place, he's not playing, and now everybody wants him back. So, you know,
now that's pretty funny. Yeah.
You know, we're always going back and forth on who we want to keep and get rid of. But, you know, I think the safeties were really good there as well. I think Landon Collins is going to have a better year this year. So, you know, that's pretty much all I have, man. I'm excited and ready to see this year.
Well, appreciate the phone call, Lauren. And when Dave Merritt addressed the media, he did talk about how, you know, Landon Collins playing all 16 games last year, regardless of the numbers, regardless of how you want to evaluate him, is a huge benefit to stay durable, number one, and to get on-field experience in all 16 games is only going to help his knowledge as a football player entering year number two. And it's funny, when you look at the safety group, and we've been talking about that position a lot, Paul, Landon Collins enters this season as really the veteran of the group this year.
The gray beard.
Correct, yeah. I mean, and who would have necessarily thought that? But he's now the guy that can actually step in, and if Jax has questions, if Jarrell Adams has questions, you know, who do you think's telling them? The system.
And I think even Landon would tell you that that's a very overwhelming thought.
It's not necessarily you want to throw a guy like that into that position, but to at least put things in perspective in how young this group is and the limited experience on the field they've had, that just goes to show you. If we're talking about Landon Collins being the leader of that group in the classroom, I think that certainly says a lot. We got Mike in Oakland. Mike, what's happening?
Hey, good morning, guys. Great to be back on the show.
Well, thanks for making the phone call, Mike. What do you have for us?
Yeah. Well, I really like that prior caller. You know, he's looking forward. I love the idea that Bobby Hart might actually end up as a tackle, because I got the same hope.
Don't sell that to your friends, because I don't think that's going to be.
Well, we'll see, right? That's the idea. Put out the
best
five. So, but you know, I'm going to use you guys as kind of like my confessional, because I got to get something off my chest by the draft before I can move on.
Okay.
all right.
So I think, you know, overall it was a decent draft. You know, I like the talent we got. You know, I'm interested about some of the UFAs. Like, I think Darius Powers is interesting. Anthony Dobble's a great story. But my problem with the draft is that when you have somebody who is, you know, your GM, and he's working on one of the greatest teams on, you know, in one of the highest profile leagues in the world, you know, I'm talking about our general manager, Jerry Reese. Like, there's a difference between what I consider cookbook versus strategic. And so my metaphor is like when you're building a building. If all you're going to do is build a box, then you put, you know, 18 inches on center, you slap your plywood and you walk away. You don't need a great architect like, you know, Frank Lloyd White. You don't need a structural engineer that can figure out how to build something interesting. That's what I feel like this draft was. This was cookbook. And here's kind of where I'm saying, here's kind of the way I feel like it. Number one, you know, you look at value and you look at risk and position. So, you know, when I think Jerry Reese kind of told us where he was coming from, he said, I took the guy who was the highest on the board that didn't have issues, right?
Yep.
So issues means risk. So he's saying that's risk, right? Code for risk. So,
yep.
You know, I was watching the draft with one of my best buddies. You know, we're both Jersey boys sitting out here in California. And when Laramie Tunsil fell to number 10, like, we were both absolutely on the same page. I would run to the podium and I would grab Tunsil. And here's my point. You know, I know the video came out about him smoking pot, but you have to rely on the work you did prior to the draft, not like a 30-second video that somebody throws up, you know, the day of the draft to change your mind. And
how
I
do you know? Before you go anywhere, and I'm going to let you finish. How do you know? It seems like you're going on a premise here that video dropped him in the Giants' minds. How do you know he wasn't dropped before that?
There could have been red flags before that.
Well, fair enough. I would say this. There were red flags, right? And that's what I was going to get to. And this is my problem with the draft. So there were red flags. You know, we knew that Tunsil was in there with Kimdichie in the hotel room when Kimdichie fell out of the window,
yeah.
Right? So the rap on that was people in that hotel room were partying. But despite all of that, all of the talent evaluators say that Laramie Tunsil is a guy who is a Pro Bowl quality tackle, one of the best tackles to come through the draft in 10 years. So this is where this is my problem with the draft is you put Laramie Tunsil on the field and he changes our offense in day one. He has an impact. We're talking about a 10th player in the draft. I don't want to be picking a 10th again, right? So at 10th, I'm looking for a player who's going to get on the field, make an impact from day one. My risk reward of a guy like Laramie Tunsil, who despite what was said about him beforehand, I mean, despite the risk ideas, you know, he's that kind of a talent. You know, I take him. And, you know, Eli Apple, I mean, my personal preference was William Jackson over him as a cornerback in there. But I'm not a professional talent evaluator, so I'm hoping he's going to be a great player. But I've read, you know, everything I could read about this guy before and after the draft, and nobody says he's going to step on the field and change our defense day one. Laramie Tunsil does that. And let me just quick say,
well, Mike,
second
in
round
fairness,
two.
Let him make his point,
right.
Then we'll let him hang up, okay. And then we'll go
fair
for
enough.
It.
Okay.
Go ahead, because I got a bunch of stuff.
Well,
for
I wanted it. Yeah,
go right ahead.
Point. Yeah, what do you got on the second round?
So second round, my point is kind of the same thing. So, you know, when we didn't take Tunsil and then we watched the first round go and Miles Jack is still sitting there on round two, my point to my friend is, all right, if we trade and pick up Miles Jack, then all is forgiven, right? Because I admit I was upset about the Eli Apple pick, right? So that's what happened. You know, Jacksonville traded up and they took Miles Jack. So my point is the same thing. When you watch film of Miles Jack, he is the best player on the field. He pops every play, right? And so this is a top five talent, top of round two. I think risk reward is there again with Miles Jack, and he could make a huge difference for us. And Sterling Shepard, he's a sweet player. I'm happy to have the guy, but I see he's kind of a duplicative skill set because he's similar in the mold to both OBJ and to Cruz. So he's a good pickup, but he's a conservative pickup. And I would also say Reggie Ragland sitting right there. There's a top, you know, first-round talent that's dropped into the second round who makes an impact day one. So, you know, I just feel like that this was a very conservative draft. It was, you know, you're relying on your talent evaluators and you're picking off your board. But I want a CEO up there who's got, you know, the ability to make tough decisions and make picks that are going to make a huge difference, and especially a 10th pick day one. So I can't wait to hear what you guys have to say, and thanks for my kind of long rant.
Okay, no problem at all.
Appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for waiting.
I'm going to let you delve into this. I just want to make one generic comment. Giants management, right from the top, and John Mara said, we've got to take fewer risks in this draft. We need more sure things.
Yeah.
We have had misses over the last few years, and look where it's gotten the team. Four straight non-playoff appearances. They were determined from top to bottom in this organization to make sure that they picked rock-solid guys, and they were going to turn away from risky folks. This was not just Jerry Reese sitting in a box and making this decision on his own. This was an organizational decision that the Giants wanted to take guys who were more of a sure thing. So let me just blanket everything that we say with that opening comment. Lance, please begin.
Well, I mean, I want to throw out a few things about Tunsil, but I just want to emphasize what you laid out. And all you need to do is go back to the press conference right after the season ended, and the media was pressing upon how the draft is important. Will the philosophy change moving forward? And John Mara did hint at, Paul, that, you know, he gave the front office the green light to take a few risks here or there. As an organization, they were willing to do that in the past. Now they evaluated over the last few years, and they said, you know, we got to go for more sure things, where there may be a player out there that has some upside, but, you know, we want to know this guy's clean, Paul, and we want to know he's clean on the field. And those were the types of players that they were looking for. He threw out Ragland. I mean, there were questions about injury with Ragland.
Well,
he wasn't necessarily 100% clean.
Quite
with
frankly,
respect to that.
Ragland was not a lock surefire thing. You know, he's talking about questions and doubters on Eli Apple. There were more doubters and questions about Ragland, especially his ability to cover. So
on top
your
of that,
talent evaluators, yeah. You know, not necessarily on the same page with a lot of folks there. But go
ahead.
Well,
and talent evaluators, of course, are going to vary across
yes,
the board,
will.
Too. I mean, that's
yes,
the other
will.
Thing to keep in mind. When we respect the fans weighing in, but, you know, every mock expert, Paul, has a different opinion on a player. Just like when we have the guests calling in on the Giants prospects, very few people are on the same line
sure.
when it comes to
sure.
evaluating these. So, you know, when you say this guy was evaluated as a first-round must-have, yeah, by a few people. There were other people, though, that didn't necessarily have him locked in.
I think there were
round.
Probably only about six or seven players who were absolutely concrete, top of the first round, blue chip, can't miss guys, and then, oh, yeah, by the way, Jalen Smith has a bum leg. Oh, yeah, by the way, Miles Jack has a microfracture coming up in his future for his knee, which, by the way, that's a dirty word in pro football. In fact, in any professional sport,
basketball
microfracture
too.
Is not a good word. You do not want to hear that. And I had said, and let me just put this out right now. When the Giants were on the board, Carl Banks and I had both said we would take Tunsil. But in retrospect, understanding what the Giants' philosophy was going to be and understanding that they still wound up with a guy, and I beg to differ about his impact comment because we all know the four impact positions you have to have are left tackle, cover corner, quarterback, and pass rusher. Cover corner is one of those spots that makes up the core foundation of a winning team. So says George Young, and I subscribe to George Young. You guys know that for many decades. I got no problem taking a cover corner there, especially because it met a need as well. And the only knocks on Eli Apple is that he's done it for 2 years. Trust me, if he had been a four-year player or even a third-year player, you would not have anybody doubting Eli Apple's value at number 10. There were people who had him in that ballpark anyway, but he certainly would have been there had he stayed another year in school and had a little bit more seasoning. I would also say one other thing to you. In terms of Tunsil, what good is he to you if he slips up and makes another mistake based on a portfolio he's got that's already littered with issues and he gets himself suspended? Correct. How much impact is he making for you if he can't get a jersey on Sunday?
Well, and that's what I was going to point out. One guy that comes to mind, and he didn't go in the first round. The Cowboys took Randy Gregory last year in round two, Paul.
Hey, that's a great pick, right?
He got suspended.
That's a great pick. He's getting sacks every Sunday while he's sitting in the stands.
Well, he's suspended for the first four
games
this
season. That's
my point. So that, to me, is a red flag there as to why maybe you would avoid a player like that. Number two, Will Hill, who we talked about on this program earlier this week. That's the second reason, I think, that perhaps validates the rationale behind passing on Tunzel. You've had a player in-house who was a tremendous talent when he was on the field.
Very
he
talented.
He couldn't stay on the field, though, as a result of part of what Tunzel's video inferenced. Number three, he mentioned that there's no guarantee Eli Apple is going to be an impactful player in year one that maybe Tunzel did. Paul, were people boasting about Odell Beckham when the Giants took him in round one that he was going to have that season?
Not as much as he had. And I might add, by the way, how many rookie corners, okay, who are in – how many Hall of Fame corners who are in Canton had great impact as rookies? Usually corners, it'll take them a year before they truly become impactful players. So, you know – give this guy a little break, you know. There are going to be passes that Eli Apple gives up. He might even give up a couple of touchdown passes this year. That doesn't mean he's not going to be impactful for the next decade.
And that's why you need to look at draft picks after 3 or 4 years as opposed to after year one. But I think Beckham's important to note because I don't remember people going nuts over Odell Beckham and saying he's going
to
be
not to the degree
a
that he
franchise-esque wide receiver
not.
Like he did so quickly in year one. So sometimes players can surprise you.
Last call of the show, gets the sauce bubbling, gets the oregano flying, and I appreciate that because I'm going to go get something to eat, and I'm really wide awake now to do so.
And we certainly appreciate the phone call, Mike. It's an interesting question and perspective to take, and a number of other people have called in and weighed in on that, and that's what the whole point of this program is, to have some dialogue back and forth.
Good calls today.
Absolutely. Appreciate all the impactful calls that we've had, as well as those on Twitter. Any that we didn't address on Twitter, we'll try to address that off the air. And thanks to G.A. Mangus, also for weighing in.
Please go to the archive, either go to Twitter and seek out the Giants Twitter or go to the archive on Giants.com and get a listen. Again, Jarrell Adams, the Giants' sixth round pick, rookie tight end out of South Carolina. His position coach joined us for about 15 to 20 minutes earlier in this program, and he gave us the most detailed, most thorough scouting report on this player that I've heard from anybody, and it was really good.
Absolutely. With that being said, certainly appreciate everybody for tuning in. For Paul DiTino, I'm Lance Meadow. Rookie minicamp gets underway Friday. Big Blue Kickoff Live starts at noon. Have the good rest of your Thursday. We'll speak to you tomorrow. Enjoy.